The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The DET File, the ultimate Lions podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
With us today is Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. At Dave Burkett is his Twitter address, so make sure you follow him there. And Dave, we had another game where the Lions were in it. Matt Stafford was dealing. 385 yards passing, come up just a little bit short against the Packers. What went wrong?
It's just started early and sort of snowballed. I mean, defensively, that was the big thing for the Lions on Sunday, that they had no answers for Aaron Rodgers, and he threw four touchdowns in the first half. And this is a shorthanded Lions defense, no DeAndre Levy, no Ziggy Ansah, arguably their two best defensive players. And, once they sort of got behind the eight ball there was just no coming back for this team.
Yeah, they ended up scoring late, and Marvin Jones was absolutely terrific, but it seemed like Aaron Rodgers, who had been asked a lot of questions of late to see if he had been playing well, he looked a little bit off-kilter, but in this game, coming out firing and having that kind of game early on, really only completed 15 passes and was able to cash in four of them for touchdowns. Given the injury situation for Detroit, when does that start to get better for them, and will it get better in time before they get buried in the division?
Yeah, I don't think anything is any hole is too insurmountable right now. I mean, they're 1-2. Obviously, that's not a good situation to be in, especially with the Vikings playing the way they are, and the Packers obviously being at 2-1 ahead of them as well. But they have a big game coming up this weekend against the Chicago Bears, a division game down the road. If they could somehow sneak out a win there, the rest of their schedule is not too daunting. So they come home for a few home games after the Bears game. So I think the Lions can still find their way into the playoff hunt here or into the mix for a playoff spot at the very least. But, it's not going to be easy, especially if Ansah and Levy miss more time.
Now, Detroit's running game had been getting a little bit better, but then it ran into some tough sledding here, only 2.2 yards a carry. Now, a little better than that because that'd take away the Golden Tate, the reverse. It didn't work out exactly well. But Washington, 10 carries, 38 yards, theoretic 10 carries for 9 yards. Stafford was really the only guy getting it done on the ground with his two scrambles. How do they get this running game in some sort of order? Because as great as Stafford and the receivers are, if you don't present some sort of threat on the running game, it makes it pretty difficult for any other team to not be able to scheme against you.
Well, they've run the ball pretty well the first 2 weeks, but I mentioned the injuries on the defensive side of the ball. They lose Amir Abdullah, obviously, their leading rusher last week to a foot injury, potentially season-ending foot injury. He's on injured reserve. The rest of their backfield is still a work in progress. I mean, Theo Riddick, who started, he's been more of a receiver to this point in his career, a very productive one, but he's not quite as natural running the football out of the backfield. So they need him. Dwayne Washington, the rookie seventh round pick, who's been a little bit of a revelation. They need those two guys to produce. And mostly I think they need the offensive line, because that's where they really struggled against the Packers up front. Riddick lost 10 yards. He had minus 10 yards, I believe it was, on his first five carries. So a lot of that was due to some breakdowns up front.
Yeah. Now, on the bright side, they were able to still get some things done on the ground, even though you're right. When the game was out of hand, it seemed like there was an opportunity to rack up some yards. But Theo Riddick, 7 catches out of the backfield, even if they were short. But I think everyone's been talking about Marvin Jones. You know, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns on only 6 catches. That's an enormous average per catch. Marvin Jones has come into this Detroit offense and looked like an elite wide receiver. Is some of this Jones and the maturation for him, or is a lot of this just the offense and Matt Stafford throwing to him, and there's always going to be a guy that can get big numbers?
Yeah, you know, Calvin who, right? That's the question that's being asked right now in Detroit. I mean, look, Jones is a guy that nobody saw this coming from him when he was in Cincinnati. You know, he was the top receiver in free agency, and the Lions certainly targeted him. They made some sort of deep threat on the outside. And I think the way they're using him is a big reason why he's been so productive. But still, 400 yards receiving through the first 3 games, to have a game like he did Sunday, career high in yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 long touchdowns, you know, that bodes well for this offense that has really been a nickel and dime sort of offense to a large extent since Jim Bob Cooter took over as offensive coordinator. Yet Jones adds that deep presence, and the Lions need to take more advantage of him downfield.
Stafford is averaging 40 attempts a game. Is that sustainable for him? Is this where they want to be, or do they want to cut that down and get a little more balance?
Well, he can do it. I mean, he's done it in the past, but certainly they want more balance. You know, something that Jim Caldwell has long said, you know, he wants to be about a 50-50 team in terms of a run-pass balance, and the Lions aren't doing that yet. You know, this offensive line it's had its issues over the last couple of years. And the more they put Stafford back to throw, the more times they drop him back, the more at risk he is to injury and taking a pounding like he did at some points last year. So Lions have done a pretty decent job protecting him so far this year. He had 3 sacks the other day, but all of those came in the fourth quarter when they were, you know, kind of slinging the ball around trying to catch up. So they need to get that run game established a little bit early on if they want to keep Stafford upright.
Yeah, Stafford sacked 3 times in that game, and with the game being out of hand, you don't know if it necessarily would have been worse. A very, very interesting situation there. Jim Caldwell talked about the run game, obviously, and that run blocking being a problem. Is there any way to get this fixed? Is this something that can be schemed around, or they just don't have enough talent there on that front line to be able to get any consistency?
You talk about the offensive line, that is?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, they're young, you know, so the hope within the building here is that, you know, that group is going to grow together as the season goes on. I mean, they have a rookie playing left tackle, their right tackle, Riley Reiff, he's a vet, but he's the guy that moved over to that position this year. You know, their left guard is in his second year, so they have a really young offensive line, and especially on the left side, Taylor Decker, Lincoln Tomlinson, I think those two have the most room for growth. You know, Decker gave up 2 of those sacks the other day. But, you know, he's a pretty good player. He's just going to have some lapses, and the Lions know that's going to be the case with a rookie playing left tackle. They know they're going to have to live with that. They just need everybody else to be a little more consistent, too.
Well, we know the defense is undermanned. We know that the injuries are a big-time problem. And then when you run into those days where Aaron Rodgers is just hot, there's not much anybody can do about it. Caldwell said specifically, it's all coaching, if you ask me. We don't ever back away from that. For him, see how he coaches this team, when you look at what's going on right now with the injuries, is there anything really that Jim Caldwell can change, or is this a matter of waiting for health and for the young guys like Decker to come around and get used to NFL speed?
Yeah, now he's taking a bullet for his guys in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, it's certainly not just on coaching. I mean, Caldwell's decisions have played a role in that. And, you know, I've certainly been a critic of some of his clock management at times, but look, they were, you know, there were things that they were just, their hands were tied behind their back with against the Packers. You know, they no Ansa and no DeAndre Levy. Again, that's your 2 best players on defense. And for a defense that lacks playmakers to begin with, you know, they just didn't have the firepower to compete with Aaron Rodgers. Same goes on the offensive side of the ball. You know, they have a few more weapons there, but they have some deficiencies on the offensive line that are always going to be there that, you know, they sort of have to work their way around. And when you get in a situation where you're playing catch-up all game, those things tend to show up more often than not.
We're talking with Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. You can follow him at Dave Burkett on Twitter. And Dave, seems like you might just have, if you're a Lions fan, the perfect balm for your ails, because next up is the Chicago Bears, a team that I think right now is the worst team in the NFL. They don't know if they're going to have Jay Cutler, Everything's a mess. This is a game where the Lions probably need to win this and get right, isn't it?
Right. No, it's a big game from that standpoint because, look, again, it's a road game right in the division. I think a lot of people looked at the Lions going into the year, three of their first four games on the road, and you said, you know, if the Lions could go 2-2, you know, maybe they set themselves up to at least stay in the playoff mix. So that's kind of what they need this week, is especially coming off a loss like they just had against the Packers, if they can get right. And I think they match up well with the Bears because the Bears are not a great offensive team. It's not like they're a team that's going to put up a whole lot of points. That's going to make the Lions play catch up like they did against the Packers. And the Lions, meanwhile, you know, it's an offense that can score a few points. So, you know, I don't know that the Bears certainly are not going to test the Lions' shorthanded defense the way that the Packers did. So from that standpoint, the Lions, this is a game that they should win it on the road at Soldier Field.
Well, let's put the crystal ball on. We talk about the Bears following them, the Eagles, who are undefeated, but really until this Sunday, and that was a statement game over the Steelers, hadn't beaten too many teams that were worth all that much when you consider playoff standings. Then you have the Rams, the Redskins, before the Texans. When you take a look at those next four games, three of those four teams are teams with pretty bad records. Where do you think Detroit, when we talk about this next month, where do you think they sit, and are these troubles behind them?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say the troubles are behind them. You know, I've never thought this was going to be a playoff team at the end of the year. I just think they're a team that, you know, they're not going to finish 4-12. I just, you know, they have better personnel than that. So I think they're going to be a 500 type team. You know, they're going to win some games that maybe they shouldn't and lose some games that they should. That always seems to be the Lions MO. And, you know, they certainly have a tough task ahead, even though those games are at home. So look, the Eagles have been playing really well. You know, they're going to – Jim Schwartz, their defensive coordinator, is a former Lions coach here. There's no doubt he's going to be fired up for that game. They play a pretty good defense against the Rams. You know, so I think the Lions still have their work cut out for them. But, again, I think most of those games should be competitive.
Well, on the bright side, you're talking about a Bears team. This Lions team could be 2-2 next week. Taylor Decker, as you talked about, their top pick, looks like an NFL-caliber guy. It's just going to take a little bit of time. They're asking a lot of him. So there's a lot to look forward to, I think, if you're a Lions fan, and we might see it start to turn a little bit this week against the Bears. Dave, I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Happy to do it. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much. That's Dave Burkett, again, of the Detroit Free Press. Follow him at Dave Burkett on Twitter. Make sure you stay all up to date on the Lions. And boy, if you like passing, that is your team, especially with Marvin Jones. Stick around. We'll be back with the coach, Brian Billick, when we return.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well.
looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seemed like almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress to the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder. And I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10. Their second statement game of the year, despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense. and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, two games. And so, oh, my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling. After their loss last night in Monday Night Football, the Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game, Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions, and that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. Is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. when you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, 4 touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had 6 starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after 3 games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week 1 to week, you know, now heading into week 4. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's – I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run, but – this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in, so I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.